All right, we're going to, I'm John Boyer, and this is...
Katie Pritchard.
My colleague and technical assistant, Katie Pritchard, and we're going to talk about some stuff. I could read you my title if you'd like, but I'm pretty sure that most of you are literate at this point. What I will add to the supersizing the classroom 3000 and beyond is I actually teach a class called World Regions, and so I say what some of the stuff we're doing is bringing the world into world regions, and the world regions to the world. And you're going to see what we talk about as we go through some of this stuff. Now, this isn't working at all. Sorry if I'm a little nervous or stutter or anything in this crowd. I'm not used to speaking to a crowd of this size because this is my typical classroom that I speak in front of. We do have roughly about 3,000 people, and this is all an experiment for anybody who's hardcore pedagogists. Sorry if I make fun of anybody, or into hardcore research. I respect everything you guys do. I am not that person. We are the canary in the coal mine. We're the people out there experimenting with stuff and just seeing what happens. Sometimes things don't work. Sometimes things work really well. Sometimes things we think are going to work fail miserably. And so we're trying to push the borders of how big can you get a class and still have logical interaction, true engagement, and true learning. And that's what we really strive for. This is not, hey, let's stream stuff to a million people. That's cool. There's lots of people doing that. We are trying to push the borders of the real classroom. That is, how many people can you really interact with in a real meaningful way to the students and the professor? And those are two different things. Again, you can live stream to the planet. And I don't have any problem with that. Thinking about gigantic classes, bigger and bigger classes, and to you, a class of 50 may be big. Maybe it's 500, maybe it's 5,000. So again, it's a relative term. We've seen class sizes for what I teach grow from 30 to 3,000 and beyond because we actually still turn people away even though we have a single class enrollment of 3,000. Thinking about these issues of, okay, how are you going to pull this off? We have just a few basic class philosophies. And if you think about teaching huge numbers of people, kind of the instinct is to over-structure, overdo everything. That seems very logical, like boot camp. You're going to process 5,000 people, so let's get some rules and some lines, and you will all do this. And actually, I think that's a fairly miserable way to... Yeah, this clicker's not working. We've actually adopted the opposite approach altogether. With this many people... Okay. We think that you have to actually have maximum flexibility in assignments. Go ahead. Maximum flexibility in communications and increased interaction amongst all players. I can tell you again, I teach at Virginia Tech at a major university. I'm assuming this plays into the small classroom as well. But if you try to have rigid structures on increasingly bigger and bigger classes, you will be amazed at the number of grandmothers that suddenly die during exam week. It's phenomenal, all right? In fact, I always send out a note to people, wish your grandmother good luck because we're going to have an exam next week. And if you start to think about just trying to schedule simple things like an exam or an assignment due at a certain time, it's hard enough with 30, put a couple of zeros behind it, and it just becomes a nightmare. So we said, no, we're going to do the opposite thing. We're going to blow it up and give you more opportunities to do more stuff with less actual structured due dates, and it's up to you to do what you want to do, okay? Thus, we are learner-centered to allow students to engage and learn in the ways best suited to them, and students are treated as individuals. I know, that's a novel concept. It seems impossible. But if you say, hey, I'm going to give you responsibility, I'm forcing it upon you, by the way, you have to account for yourself and the stuff that you want to do in the class to earn your grade. They have to take ownership over it. And in a class of this size, the students actually end up taking ownership over the course itself in terms of what I'm going to lecture about and stuff they're going to pull in and stuff they want to hear about and communities that get built within a class of 3,000, you suddenly have 20 or 30 or 100 people who are doing something over on the side, and I'm talking outside the classroom. So it's kind of a organic, cool thing that we couldn't even actually predict that's starting to happen, okay? And in doing these things, we found that a gigantic kind of group synergy evolves organically, and that's really nice that people are like, this is exciting, this is cool. Not just that it's experimental, but because they get to do the stuff that excites them, and then the people who like doing this assignment find each other, and the people who like this type of music find each other. And so this group synergy naturally evolves that, again, we kind of did not predict. Now, about our course, and I'm just going to go through this quickly so you understand the mindset of the subject that we teach, because some of these things, of course, may not be applicable if you're a calculus teacher, but I'd like to think that, yes, you can even probably dabble with some of the stuff. The course I actually teach is called World Regions. We do have an enrollment of 2,750 people in the fall semester, and usually we have a buffer of a couple hundred seats for fire purposes, and those usually get filled too, and other people come in and just sit in on the class. The live lecture is usually on Monday evenings because that's the only time of the week where nobody's really doing anything. And we actually show international film as a part of our course on Monday or Tuesdays and Wednesday nights. The content of this course I'm actually really passionate about, and maybe that comes through already. I get fired up about people being smarter. I want everybody to be smarter than me, which maybe not that hard to do, but about the particular content, Americans are woefully inept in international affairs and what's going on in the world. Again, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir here, no big deal. So the content is what every student ought to know, but don't, about what's going on the planet. In this age of increasing globalization, interconnection, where we are expecting all of our American students to graduate and be working in global fields or for global firms or traveling around the world, what are we doing to prepare them for that? Answer, not enough, not nearly enough, not yet. So we are very lucky in that I teach this course that I'm passionate about because I want people to be smarter, especially if you given that America is the world superpower that affects all the rest of the planet. We have a duty, a moral a duty as citizens to know what the hell our country's doing everywhere. So I'm passionate about the subject. It's something that people inherently, when they get in there, are like, yeah, I should know this. And once I know about what's going on in the Middle East or what's going on with the Chinese yuan, I'm so much smarter than even my parents. I feel really good about myself. And again, that builds into the synergy. We're very blessed that this topic is awesome and people love it. Just on a technical note, actually in the classroom, and again, the room seats about 3,000 people, slightly bigger than this venue, we have two huge screens going. Each screen is about as big as this room on alternative sides of the stage. One with my, typically with my class notes on it that I kind of click through, and the other side sometimes has regional slideshows with factoids on it about the region that I'm talking about. By the way, this is all in geography, so I talk about Russia for a while, I talk about the Middle East for a while, I talk about South America for a while, and so the alternative screen has other information that may or may not be useful to that specific thing I'm talking about, but it adds an active component to what's going on that keeps people engaged. Even the people who would ordinarily be texting or snoring have, if they don't like listening to me, then they got something else to look at, okay?
And also before class, if you are in the beginning of class when you're talking about a news story, I'll pull up news stories that on that topic on the other projector to show what's going on.
Right, so yeah, we have polling going before class to say, hey, what do you want to talk about today that's of interest, okay? Now, a classroom of 3,000 is a pretty weird thing. And I put the word weird in here because of the event organizer who said this in the tent. Anybody go to the tent yesterday and get free drinks at the social last night? And he said, keep it weird. And I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood. We're the weirdest people here, all right? I will challenge any. No, we will have a weirdness competition later at a pub to be named because we got the weirdest stuff going on. We've got weird products. I speak in a different language. Perhaps it's much more down to earth is one way to that people describe me. I've written textbooks and comic books in different blogs and podcasts. We're putting everything we can out there in every format possible because, well, I'll ask you guys, why would that be? Why would we put this content in as many different avenues as possible? Sorry, I'm very interactive, so I'll squid and start asking. There you go! That's awesome! The answer everybody knew. Because some people like comic books and would never, ever read about global warming in the Arctic because they don't give a damn. That's for liberal tree huggers. But if I put in a comic book as an action with an action hero like Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, who's beating people up where we talk about it, hey, I accidentally learned something. And by the way, we have some of this, again, free swag up front here. So weirdness is one of my specialties. The textbook that we wrote is all written in the first person with this superhero / super loser as the host of it. It's intended to be engaging. It's intended to be not academic, to be non-rigid, to be a conversation. And that's what I'm all about in text, but also in real life, is conversation, talking with people. By the way, everything we talk about in this class or in this lecture and all of the stuff that I've talked about thus far is all on a weird site called theplatadventure.com. That's my alter ego where all of this creativity can happen, and it's all free. We just put it all out there. I know we're losers. We haven't monetized yet, but it's like, no. I just want people to be smarter in lots of different ways. You can go look at this stuff and see if any of it intrigues you. Okay? Now, in terms of keeping it weird and unique in today's college classroom, as I suggested, we've kind of blown the model up from the inside out. We've said, yeah, we have 3,000, but instead of being rigid, we're going to let people do what they want to do. Sounds crazy, sounds risky, sounds like a lot of work, and it is. But what we have is the syllabus is, this is a create your own fate course. You do what you want to do. Yes, we got to have old school tests and exams because actually people are so brainwashed into thinking that that is how knowledge is tested that people actually get bothered if I say, no, you don't have to take the exam. They're like, what? But I have to at some point fill in bubbles to show you that I have knowledge, and I'm of the opinion I don't care. I would much rather you do something creative or write something or go make a video. Whatever you want to do to express the stuff you've learned in the class, that's what we're all about. So we show international film. We have foreign commenting. We have a host of technology stuff, and we're going to talk about these in detail or one at a time, that people can do. We do have the, like I said, the kind of standard midterm final exams, weekly quizzes. A lot of this stuff is online. With this many people, you do have to automate. But again, I would like to get away from test altogether and have people forcibly prove knowledge. Flash quizzes is something we just started last year, and students love this. I have no idea why. Seems like work. But I'll make a video podcast of something, say the president of Russia just got reelected yesterday, and I'll go make a 20-minute spiel on it, put it online, and say, oh, by the way, I'm sending an email to everybody in the room. I'm going to have a quiz on this podcast in 2 hours, and it's only open for 3 minutes. Good luck. And they love it. I guess it's kind of a game that it's like, oh, it's basically a pop quiz at any time of the day anywhere on the planet, which has been fun.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue. People keep asking for more of it. One other one I want to point out is number 6, non-class event papers. We're all about building community all the time, especially in a college campus environment with so much going on. So we actually kind of force people to diversify and say, go watch someone else's lecture and write a paper about that for this class. Anything that's international, go see an international speaker. Go see a Japanese drum group. Go see something that's about another part of the world in someone else's class and bring it back here and do it for credit. So again, this is kind of a community building. Get out there and see other stuff. And don't just listen to me. Get out there and see what else is going on.
You know, if you think it's a lot of work, we also have 3 full-time TAs that help with
the Yeah, community. I'm sorry. I have people who actually do all the work for me, too. I should have prefaced this entire talk with that. Yes?
So what's the grade distribution?
I'm sorry. Should we carry a mic over to him? Or? Actually, I just wanted you to put it in the mic. So if you could get to the mic and ask that question, the mic right here. I'm sorry, if anybody, right here in the front.
I guess they're podcasting, so
yeah, they're
able to capture your voice and your question.
By the way, as you might have picked up at this point, jump in with a question anytime. But because they're podcasting, they have asked that you say it into the microphone. Not me. I say just throw a chair at me from the back of the room, but they need it at the mic. Go ahead.
So this will wind up being a short question. What's the grade distribution by the end of the semester?
We've only done this for three, four semesters. And it is skewed towards the A side. It's the typical bell curve, but skewed over towards AB. And I know a lot of people, again, people in assessment are like, oh, it must be too easy. I'm like, they did the work. What do you want me to tell you? I mean, the concept that we're supposed to give a certain number of people Cs and a certain number of people As and a certain number of people Fs is counterproductive to society. Sorry, I'm going off on a rant now. Because do you expect people to go get a job and they go to their $50,000 a year paying job and they say, well, there's 10 of you. Only one of you gets $50,000 this year. All of you did the work, but only two of you get $50,000. Two of you have to only take $30,000 because obviously those people did better work than you. This is not my specialty. I don't deal with stuff like that. And it is skewed towards the high side. And here's what I tell students. It should all be A's. Do whatever you want. You fail the exam? Fine. Go do something else. Don't take tests well? Go plan on going to more movies. Don't like reading subtitles, which amazingly people don't. I can't read subtitles in a foreign film. Don't see any of the films. Go take the exam or go do something else. Write a paper. Yes. I'm sorry, you got to go to the mic. It's okay.
So when you say you want to abandon quizzes and show them how to, you know, force them to exhibit their learning, what are you thinking about doing?
Well, we're not going to abandon quizzes. Like I said, the flash quiz stuff is being embraced fairly well. I'm kind of over the end of the year exams. The concept of I'm going to listen to somebody talk and read 10 million things and in, you know, 90 days have a single test where I fill in bubbles to demonstrate. I'm not sure that demonstrates much to me anymore. So we're inventing new ways. I don't have an answer for you.
Like performance art?
I'll do performance art. That's great. I was saying this, we're living in a generation of Twitterers, so I was thinking, and somebody can give me feedback in the room right now just from yelling, I was thinking how hilarious would it be to have an oral exam for 3,000 people one at a time, and they only have a tweet to give me, to tell me something they know, and me to be able to respond back, a 5-minute interview with 3,000 people, or the people who would want to do that. I am going to start experimenting with that. Because you know what? You can't fake oral. Sorry, that sounds terrible to say out in public, all right? Sounds terrible, but that's kind of what I do. So when you talk to people, you know if they know. You know! There's some people that are really lucky bubblers who don't know anything.
And the best thing about this as well is when you're talking about the curve is like the people who fail, when they're like, I just really have one more extra credit assignment. Can you make up something for me? It's like we made up tons of options for you. That end of the year stress when the students are like, can you offer more extra credit? It's like, no, you had the system, you should have planned, and if you fail, then you failed it. You didn't do the work. It's much easier with all the whiners to come to you at the end. It's like, no, we have the system.
Hey,
like,
be nice. They're not
the
whiners.
You know, you always have that small percentage who's like, no, I have to pass. It's like, that's great. You should have. Then I don't know what to tell you.
It is astounding. When we implemented this system, we went from at the end of the semester, or even during the semester, from 20 dying grandmothers and 20 or 30 other excuses of seriously, I'm failing, and you have to help me. We went from that to zero in the semester we implemented this. Because there's nowhere to hide. Again, it's kind of like an oral exam. There's nowhere to hide. It's all right there, baby. You got it. Do it. And if you don't do it in a timely fashion, then and students get that. They're like, oh, yeah, I got nothing. People still do fail, and they'll come and say, I failed. I'm like, and? Okay, see ya. I mean, there's not a lot of recourse, so it's interesting. Again, this is all experimental, okay? But we weren't supposed to spend already 20 minutes talking about the structure of the class, although this is great because a lot of people are fascinated with it. We want to talk about some of the technologies we use to connect with people and do these grading assessments and get people engaged. And I'm going to break this into kind of three main parts: communications, community building, and social networking. And then hopefully we'll get to future endeavors. I seriously doubt it. But we'll start with communications. And Katie's job, I'm sorry, Ms. Pritchard's job, is what do you always say your job is for me?
Helping connect 3,000 people with one teacher through the use of technology.
Right. And again, we're extreme, like extreme Doritos, but we're like real life education. We understand this is not everybody's cup of tea. We're pushing the boundaries to see what can be done. How many people can a human interact with on a real basis? We're doing 3,000 right now. I would love to take it to 30,000. Because I'm monetizing? No, because I'm passionate about seeing what can logically and realistically be done and be able to do it to know that people have gained something from it. So she is the one. She's the technology person. I'm just the face. So if you have any questions about any of this stuff from now and all into the future, she's the one to talk to, okay? So communications, overcoming the distance between instructor to students is a biggie with this many people for sure, okay? We have a variety of ways to do that. But, of course, we're always trying to build community along the way. So how do we get students interacting with each other in a class of this size? Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm not pointing at you, so you're fine. Welcome. Come on in, all right? Somebody wants to ask a question, though.
So when you said, interacting in a meaningful way,
yep.
How many students can you interact with? What is your baseline for what you feel like you're not willing to give up as the class size grows, right? So you're looking like Norvid's AI class, right, that was recently done that was... What did he end up with? 200? 100,000 students?
Yeah, I mean,
What are you not willing to sacrifice as class size grows?
I haven't hit it yet, so I don't know. I'd like to think that what we've done in the last couple semesters with 3,000 is still not kind of effective, is extremely effective because people keep coming up saying, that was the best semester I ever had. And again, we don't want to trivialize academia. There should be tests and assessments and papers written, and somebody else can do that. All right? But the instinct that I'm getting from student after student is, that was cool. Yes?
So before this, you were teaching 10 sections of...
No. This class started was a standard class of 50 over a decade ago. I've been doing this for about 13 years. And the demand for the class kept growing. It is part of the core curriculum. But again, I like it to think that it's more that people understand this is information they need to have. And you know how college students are. The word spreads. People know there's a class out there that they tap into is interesting, good, or goofy and funny, whichever. But the class grew jumped to 575 about a decade ago. And then I got to a point, and this is going to seem very egotistical, so I'm sorry up front. We got to a point about 3 years ago where, for those of you that are in the university settings, you know, you have 575 seats in your class, 575 seats full for your class. And then at our university, they say, and here's how many extra requests that seats didn't fill. And when the number hit 4,500 of seats that didn't fill, I was like, holy crap, this is terrible. And I had students coming to me going, please, I've got to get into your class. My grandmother's going to die if I don't get into your class. Sorry, I'm all about the grandmothers today. And I have to graduate. And you feel bad. You're like, why is the university bureaucracy making me suffer like this and having to talk to students and turn them away crying? And so actually that's one of the reasons I decided to experiment, was the demand got so high. I just said, you know what, let's do something funny. Let's do 3,000 at one time. We'll wipe out all the demand in one fell swoop, and then I can go back to teaching classes of 50. Won't that be fun? And the reverse happened. We taught 3,000, and the next semester, 6,000 people try to sign up. And we're like, oh, okay. Wrong answer, right? Okay, but now that we're like halfway through our talk, and we've only got to slide 3 of 500, which, by the way, is how I teach class as well, we'll roll through some of these. Ways to stay connected, of course, the very obvious, Facebook and Twitters, and actually for those of you that are worried about privacy issues, a lot of teachers say, I don't know if I want to connect with students on an individual basis. I embrace it, except I set up fake accounts. So I'll have the Plaid Avenger account, and I'm like, hey, you can do anything you want to here because this is a fake character. But I do have a personal account, a personal account that's me that students can interact with all the time. But then I have a different one for family that nobody knows about. So the privacy issues to me are no big deal. Just make up fake stuff. I mean, you should at least at this point, if you're a public figure, should have at least 10 different accounts. And that's just the way that it's going to roll.
And this is also the slide we put up before class. This is up. As people are walking in the room, they're like, oh, okay, I'll connect. This is how I can connect and join the group.
So. Right. And this diffuses the ignorance debate. It's like, there's so many ways to contact me. You can't possibly say you didn't know about something. You didn't hear about it. I didn't know where you were. No, everybody knows where I'm at, so that one doesn't play either. Okay. We also have a class hashtag. We'll get to that. So Facebook, Twitter, for quick class notices. Go ahead, Katie, and polling. And again, on my Facebooks, I use that as a forum, not for education so much on Facebook and Twitter, although I do Twitter news stories that I want people to see. But on Facebook, it's more of a kind of public interaction of, hey, how did I do on that exam? Because I aced it. Oh, wait a minute, I wrote it, all right? And people respond to that. Again, this is an age of people that are into that social dimension. And I'm not saying we should spoon feed them and give them what they want, but if you become a relatable person to them at that level, I just think it seems to work better. And again, I had 29 comments and 38 people like, I didn't read any of these comments. Sorry, none of my students are in this room. So
I read the typo one and fixed this.
Yeah, this is more for people to interact with each other on a common forum. Yes.
So I work in a university environment. We have open courses. The big concern is like, oh, people are going to put things in there that are racial slurs or things of this nature, religious slurs or whatnot, and there's a big fear. So the question is, Have you experienced that? Have there been where people are not nice to each other on your site?
Amazingly enough, and again, with this many people, I keep waiting for that shoe to drop, and it has not.
Of course, you're not reading the comments either.
That's true. That's true. I have people do that for me, though.
I read the comments.
I will go ahead and throw this out in a similar light. When you have this many people, it's actually a powerful thing, and it's a lot of self-patrolling. And again, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build community, people interacting with other people. I anymore am saying, I'm not really the professor. I'm more of a moderator of what's going on. Yes, I'm going to tell you the real news sources. I'm going to insert my opinions and assessments about stories and regions of what's going on. And yes, I will even interact with you guys in forums. I'm kind of the line. I'm the red line, right, of, hey, yeah, I'm the dude who's here trying to give you the real information. But mostly I want people to play off each other. And I will go ahead and give out the Facebook cheating example. We haven't had anybody do anything nasty yet. But students, we have these weekly quizzes. You read the textbook. You read some outside stories. Go take a quiz on it. Multiple attempts. Take it as many times as you want. Keep learning until you get 100. And so, of course, everybody wants to game the systems as hard as they can. So some ingenious kids said, hey, let's start up a Facebook page of Boyer's Weekly Quiz Answers. And they had a Facebook page, and 750 people signed up. And they started putting up questions of, what's the answer to this one? I didn't get this one. I didn't get this one. And before I even found out about it, other students started posting articles, and you guys are losers. It's that you can take the quiz as many times as you want, loser. What's your problem? And then I had the ingenious idea, well, let's game them back. All students who don't like this, start putting up fake answers to fake questions and flood the Facebook page. And then they did that, and then the people who made the Facebook page realized that they had been found out, and within all of this was in a 120-minute cycle. The whole Facebook page was down. Everybody unfriended. It was all shut down. I didn't do anything. And then, of course, in class the next week in front of 3,000 people, we belittled and berated them, as is appropriate. But that's all I did. And I think there always is a risk, especially when you start talking about international topics, which is my forte. Try to start talking about Israel and Palestine and see if you don't piss somebody off. Because if you don't, you haven't said anything besides the words Israel and Palestine. And even that might have pissed somebody off, for all I know. So you can't, I guess the brief answer after the long one is, you can't worry about it. What are you going to do in today's world in front of 30 or 3,000 that somebody's not going to be offended? Or that somebody's going to take things the wrong way, or someone's going to act out in an inappropriate fashion. That is the world in which we live. You know what? I think that's the world as it always has been. It's just faster and easier now online. So that's same old, different format. Okay. Twitter, we have a class hashtag. The great thing about the hashtag, and I think I love speaking to this group because you guys know what a hashtag is. Every other conference we've talked to, we've been like, hashtag? And we're like, okay, here's the deal. This thing called Twitter, all right? So good. We don't have to tell you about what it is, but here's why we like it. Go ahead, Katie. Obviously, people can talk about what's going on, and this is sometimes live streamed during class, so we can pick off questions. Sometimes we have the screen up, but go ahead and click it in, Katie. The real power, again, is people helping people. So people get on the Twitter and like, hey, when's that movie? Did I miss it? And someone else is like, no, you dummy. It's on the schedule. You already missed it. Takes us out of the equation. Awesome. People helping people, students answering other students' questions. And that's kind of a trivial one, but it's important when you have this many people that you have some help from the class. Poll Everywhere, you've now already seen. And again, this is something we use before class, sometimes during class. I just get off on a tangent, and people start asking specific questions over and over. And I'm like, okay, stop. Let's put up a poll. How many people want to go in this direction from the lecture starting right now? And again, it's a little nerve-wracking because most of us have prepared lectures. But I'm willing to always roll the dice and try something new. And say, okay, let's go. Let's do it. All right. Okay. Ustream Office Hours Online is a very popular one that I highly recommend for everybody. This may be the single biggest breakthrough to be able to handle this many people. Ustream's free service, although they're now introducing commercials like every 5 or 10 minutes, and that's problematic. But for those, again, college campus people, college students don't go to office hours. They haven't for a decade or two. So, and that's because that's not how they communicate. You're not walking all the way across campus and standing in front of some old geezer's door for 50 minutes waiting to talk to him. People are just not going to do that. You can say it's good, it's bad, doesn't matter. It's the way it is. So we took it online. We're like, hey, there's all these great services. So now I tweet out and Facebook out and email out to class. I'm going to be live Monday nights or Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, to answer any of your questions. And I have been teaching for 13 years. For 12 years, I think I had 3 people show up to office hours. When we implemented this, 300 people showed up and hung out in a room and chatted with each other. And again, I'm too clueless to manage all this stuff. She manages the chat room.
There's a chat room that comes with UStream that I manage because it moves way too fast for him. There's a question asked, and then it just, the question gets asked, and it goes so quickly up that he misses it. So he'll have instant messenger.
On my screen, people can instant message me or Google chat me in the window, and the question pops up. And so I say, yep, if you want a question, I will answer every question that you have, and then other people can hear it. And, of course, they're doing their own thing in their chat room. And the funny thing is that people who aren't even in the class anymore now show up, and they're like, yeah, that was cool. I just want to see what Boyer wants to say about this current event about Vladimir Putin and Russia. And then they'll ask questions. So it's kind of an ongoing building community effort that's pretty wicked cool. And we're also going to start experimenting with the next new one we heard is hot called Spreecast. It's another free service, and I'll let Katie tell you why Spreecast is perhaps slightly cooler than UStream right now.
I like the Spreecast because that area where it says Gary Vaynerchuk in the link, that's usually ad space on UStream. And with this, there is no ads. And during that ad space, you can post what you want to. So if John's talking about a story about Vladimir Putin, he could put a link to it. Here's the story we're talking about right now. And also, Spreecast lets you, people allow in the audience to use their camera. You can click on them and then it'll be a dual screen, so Gary would be on the left, and then the person he picked on will be on the right. You can actually have up to 4 people where, that's where thinking the future is, we'll click on the person, and now live, you can ask your question. We'll go to their video.
Of course, you tie in probably through Facebook and Twitter so people's icons show up, so you can see who's in the room and who's chatting. You can only figure that the future is that they'll be able to have like 20 or 30 or 100 Brady Bunch windows open with people talking to each other. I'm sure they're getting there already. I don't know that I would be able to do that, but for, say, a class, can't have 3,000 people talking to you at once. But certainly for real interaction, again, all of this is about interaction. All of this is about the dialectic. It's all about going back and forth. To me, that is what education is. It is what teaching is. That's never going to go away. You can make 10 million awesome Audacity sites. No offense to Audacity. I think it sounds pretty cool. But if it's one way, that's not what I do. It's not what I'm ever going to do. There has to be the back and forth. So that's what all these things are doing.
And the great thing about both these services is that it saves it. It records and saves it. So if they miss something, be like, yeah, you can go back. My office hours are on there. They're recorded. You can go back years for UStream now and watch every single office hours.
Yeah, we have 2 years of my office hours recorded at the low, low price of nothing.
So, yeah,
cool,
it's great.
Done, thanks.
Lectures,
we have streamed some. In fact, when we chatted with Aung San Suu Kyi, a Nobel Peace Prize winner actually last semester, did we run through that through UStream?
We did some, but we also recorded it and posted
it. Yeah, we have multiple ways to record. I am recording class lecture, not just in blog format, but in kind of a studio format as well, and putting that stuff online. So again, all of these things are to make it more and more accessible. The content's king, of course. Our age is all about how do you make it more accessible to more people, and that's cool, but I never want to lose that back and forth.
But you can't break the classroom boundary, right? A student could never set foot in your classroom?
We're working on that. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to make him go to the mic.
You can repeat it if you need to.
Okay, we're working on the full online, and I would do want to stress, I have resisted using these technologies for years. I'm sure there are no Luddites at this conference, but I'm a semi-Luddite, all right? For years, I said, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not using chintzy things just to use them. I'm not going to online to pre-record myself and put myself online. That's just lazy, all right, if there's no interaction. But the technologies are now there. That's what we're excited about. That's what we're doing. It's like, oh, wait a minute, now we could go online. And maybe we could have a class of 50,000, but I'm still going to be holding office hours 3 to 5 times a week to talk to everybody and see if they got questions and see what's going on. Okay. Let's see. Video podcasts, I already referenced. Current events. A lot of these video podcasts, they go off of stuff mentioned in class that people have more questions about. And I'm like, okay, we only have 2 hours together. Note taken. I'll talk for 20 or 30 minutes on that. We'll post it online. So that's the professor, that's me, does podcasts. But the Plat Avenger sneaks in there in costume and does a plaid cast every now and again as well. He's a little more rowdy than I am, all right? Okay, Katie? And now let's get to community building and social networking, which was supposed to be the bulk of our talk, but now we're down to 10 minutes, all right? So we'll hustle even faster through this. I think that you guys have kind of gleaned what I'm excited about and what we do, so I don't have to tell you about how awesome community building is. It's the secret, to me, personal call, it's the secret to successful classrooms for the rest of this century. It's about the community. It's about keeping people engaged. All of the debate about it's going on right now is people saying, I don't want this, and people are Twittering in my classroom and Facebook, and it's like, that's because they're not engaged in what you're saying. It does not mean you're a bad person. It doesn't even mean you're a bad instructor. Things are just changing. So we're all about how do you keep people engaged, and this is the ways that we've seen. Content-driven exercises that create interaction. Again, not just with me, the professor, but with the student. And one of the ways we did this on the Plaid Adventure site is to create platforms where students post and discuss current event news stories. Again, I'm lucky because my content kind of demands that people are engaged with the world. I don't know if it works for calculus, but I can easily see how people go in and say, hey, man, I can't figure out this problem. Hey, let's work it out together, student to student. Click it again, Katie. So we have it broken down to regions, and if you click again, Katie, you can see that people have to go in and twice a week post a new news story that no one else has posted, and then three times a week you have to go comment on somebody else's story or comment on someone else's comment. Again, it's forcing it a bit. It's forced interaction. It's forced dialectic. That's what I'm here for. I don't care if you call it forced. This is just a forum. I mean, forum technology is pretty straightforward, yeah. This is just one on our personal website. And it's our personal website, so we can control it. So we can filter it, so we can manipulate it, and at the end of the semester, we can click on a user's name and see everything they said all semester. Okay? Go ahead. The next one that has gotten a lot of press play is Twitter. We think maybe we figured out a really cool way to use Twitter that makes people smart. Because most Twitters ain't. As of yet, it's mostly just a communication tool to tell people what you had for dinner within 2 seconds, all right? So we looked at this stuff and said, okay, well, it looks like a community building device. We got the hashtag. But what we do for class is we created an entire plaid shadow cabinet of planet Earth. Those of you not familiar with politics, a shadow cabinet is a fake government that mirrors the real government. Okay, we don't do it in our country, but the Brits and the Australians do it. So we have a world plaid world leader for every real world leader on the planet. We have a plaid Barack Obama and a plaid David Cameron of the UK and a plaid Angela Merkel. And each of those people in our class is a student who as an assignment has to follow trail and be that world leader for the semester in a very real way, seeing what policies they're working on, what people they're meeting with, what do they think about Israel and Palestine, how do they vote at the United Nations. And I thought, this is a little chintzy. This is no big deal. Everybody who's done this, not everybody, a large percentage of people who do the Twitter assignment are like, holy crap, my brain exploded up so much smarter at the end of that semester. It seems like so easy. Oh, I just got to go tweet from people. Oh, I just got to tweet. We're like, yeah, you have to tweet three times a day. Where are you at? What you working on? What are you doing? Who are you meeting with? Simple, right? The end of the semester, people are like, I understand global politics so much better to see how this person behaved. And as part of the assignment, you also have to interact with your other plaid shadow cabinet leaders. So if Angela Merkel makes fun of Nicolas Sarkozy tomorrow, our Twitterers have to reflect that. So they're talking to each other as well. And again, at the end of the semester, we go click on plaid Vladimir Putin. We see everything they've written for 3 months. In essence, it's a long-form essay written one sentence at a time. And it's all right there. Yep. And our newest one, Delicious, and also Reddit, we're probably going to start doing too, introduced to us by Jesse Irwin, a former student now working in the Bay Area, because our family just keeps growing when we teach people. They stay in the club. And Delicious and Reddit, which we have not implemented yet, are news curation sites, which is another big, big skill that students probably of every major are going to need in the coming century, and that is, how do you figure out what's real, what's not real? How do you figure out political bias? How do you figure out what's really going on in this information age where there's too much information? And news curation is a great way to do it, and this assignment is simply, and Delicious is an awesome site to do this, you go tag news stories in clusters. So we say, hey, you have to do this once or twice a week. You have to go out and find 5 related news stories on Vladimir Putin or Colombian cocaine cartel or something else from different news sources, accepted news sources, that shows a leftist opinion and a rightist opinion, and you have to comment on each of those stories as well. So again, curation, biggie. It's a biggie. I think of myself almost anymore as a curator of information and then filtering it and giving it to other people.
Yeah. We're all about having it out there. Like, we don't do this within a closed Blackboard system. This is all out there. Our forums are visible to anybody. Delicious, visible to anybody. We want it all out there so everybody can see it.
Yeah, thank you for adding that. Yeah, I'm all about academic transparency, too. I want students to, 10 years from now, be able to go back and say, hey, that's what I did 10 years ago in college. Hey, I'm going to put that in my resume. Of course. Why the hell do we have people taking, you know, writing a 30-page thesis that an advisor reads and throws in the garbage? I mean, what a waste of human potential and information. We use an exterior site that's attached to the textbook, but we cannot wait for Google to come out with freeware because we're on that, riding that horse.
Well, they're there. We're waiting for Virginia Tech to get moved to it.
So. Well, they're not ready for 3,000 people use simultaneous users either, I don't think. But anyway, that's a discussion for another time. Okay. So Delicious, Reddit, those are content-driven things. Next one is student input, creating shared knowledge. And I'm a big believer in this, although this is still very new. In terms of, I think people are smart. And I actually think even dumb people are smart. And what do I mean by that? I grew up, in Virginia, but I grew up in America. And I would rather talk to the dumbest person in Iran right now about what's going on than the smartest person in the United States about what's going on in Iran right now. Because I'm interested in what's going on in Iran right now, not someone's opinion, okay? So I started this thing just for kicks, again, trying to think about how to build community and get students excited about the class, called the International Interview. We're a big campus. It's a big class. So I say, if you grew up in some other part of the planet, just come talk to me for 20 or 30 minutes about anything you want. I don't care, anything you want. You want to talk about cuisine of Saudi Arabia? I had the most fascinating conversation with somebody who told me that outside Mecca, there's a whole chain of fried chicken restaurants. It's the best on planet Earth. And everybody who goes to Mecca goes and eats this chicken. And they actually pack it out. He goes, oh, no. You get on an airplane going out of Mecca, all of the overhead bins are filled with fried chicken. And that is like the perfect crystallization of, how would I have ever heard that? How would I ever glean that information about this culture? It's just casual conversation. And I want to do this times a million. I want to talk to people from every town and city across the planet. And once more, I want students to do it. Can you imagine the future, probably in the next 5 to 10 years of education, where someone's going to do a report on Kazakhstan? And instead of going to Wiki and reading about Kazakhstan and cutting and pasting, or reading an encyclopedia entry about Kazakhstan, hey, I went and talked to 50 people in Kazakhstan, including the president of Kazakhstan. Here's my report. That is genius. Not that because I came up with it, but that's just an awesome way to look at building a true network of knowledge exchange that people aren't doing yet. We're just using the internet to buy stuff mostly, and it's like we need to get to the next level. So the International Interview we do, and these are all posted. You can see them. They're all just audio interview. And we're using Google Map, and you can click it, Katie. We've only done like 100 or so far, but we have it tied to Google Map. Click it again. You can zoom it in. We put it on people's hometown. So, again, we want to populate the entire planet so that anytime you're traveling anywhere on planet Earth, you could come to this website and be like, hey, I'm going to some small town outside of Bangalore in India, and you could go click on it, and somebody could tell you about Bangalore. Just like that. Okay. The other community building exercise, this is all about community building on this one, is we stumbled across this a freeware called Turntable. It's a music sharing platform. Think of it as Facebook for music. In fact, if you're on Facebook, through Facebook, just go to this site. You can click on it right now for those of you that have a device open. And you will automatically be jumped into a room. And what room you want to go into is dependent on your music taste. So there's an 80s room, a 90s room, a metal room, an opera room. And you can just go in, and the icons at the top are all the icons are people, okay? The icons at the top are the five people that are the DJs that are playing music, so they get to pick what music's being played in the room. And if you like the music, you click awesome, and you start dancing. If you don't like it, you click lame. And if enough people lame, your song gets passed. Sounds pretty silly, right? How the hell does he use this for class? It's a genius community-building device because people love music. Who doesn't love music? Actually, I'm not a huge fan, but people love music. And so we created our own international spin room, and we play this before class in front of 3,000 people. You get about 200 people in there dancing and doing stuff, and you can interact and chat with each other on the side. And the rules of our room are it just has to be a non-English song from not America or the UK. And therefore, we're making people go and experience new music and share it with their fellow students. And people are like, oh, that song was really cool. What is that? And you can like the song and put it in your repertoire. Again, does that help me teach about world politics? Not in the least, but kind of. Because again, what we're doing is people are meeting people within the classroom. Even though it's huge, it starts to become a familiar setting because you make friends. People who like this type of music make friends in that room. And actually, we have our usher in the back. Is that your user, right? You like this idea, right? See, there you go. He came up and said he liked this turntable stuff. And then I'm trying to hustle because we're down to the 3 minutes.
That's right. We have 13 left.
Okay, but we do want to leave time for questions. So I'll try to get through these fast. The last thing is actually the one that's gotten us the most press in the last 6 months. And that is using technology to network to experts outside the classroom. Perhaps not a novel concept, but we took it to the extreme. Why? Because that's what we do with 3,000 people. How do we do it? Well, not only, go ahead, the very first one we did was, I don't know if anybody saw this movie called The Way that came out about 6 months ago with Emilio Estevez and Martin Sheen. They decided to guerrilla market it. They actually got on a bus. You can click it in, Katie. They wanted, it's a small piece about this old pilgrimage route in northern Spain, so it has an international dimension. It's a human drama, but it has all these European characters in it and Martin Sheen. And they decided to do guerrilla marketing on it, and instead of spending $10 trillion to put it on billboards, because they knew nobody was going to come see a thought-provoking piece like this in America, they got on a bus and drove around the country. You might have seen or heard of it. They just drove around the country. And when I heard about that, and students told me about this, they're like, hey, isn't that cool if we got them here? And I'm like, yes, it would be cool. So we did a video shout-out where I said, hey, bring the bus by Blacksburg, Virginia. You're looking for audiences to show this to. I got the perfect audience. I got your demographic, Martin Sheen. These are the people that spend money to go to the movies. Come on by and show your movie. And the results were that they did. And Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez came and pitched their movie, and click it again. And we got Martin Sheen to put on a Virginia Tech Hokie shirt and jersey. And of course, the coolest thing ever, this is now the best picture I've ever taken in my life with me and Emilio Estevez. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who looks better ass in that? I'm voting for me, of course. Really, though, one of the fascinating things is that this was all done through social networking. We put out a video. We made this. The students made it go viral. They talked to friends who talked to friends who viewed it. The local news picked it up. We then hammered 3,000 Twitter requests to Emilio Estevez's Twitter account and their Facebook page. And now, here we're getting to the meat and potatoes. Think about what you can do when you have 3,000 people help you do it. I know everybody, big classes are bad, big classes are bad. You can demand big things with big classes, and you should. And not just I want everybody to go start teaching classes of 3,000 because then I'll be out of business, but think about chaining and networking classrooms together to demand certain things. Hey, we have 500 classrooms of 30 who want the top scientist to do a talk to us. That's powerful, and people are not thinking about this. They're not, because we're also isolated doing our own things, and we need to push people out of the box for education and say work together to demand more, but I'll come back to this. The Twitter thing. Go back, Katie. Click through. Emilio Estevez, I don't know if you read the Twitter, but this community thing I'm talking about is not simply just us, but Emilio Estevez, they had such a good time. I mean, they were crying at the end of it. They were saying this is the best stop we had the whole across the entire country, and Emilio Estevez has adopted our school. He wished he went to college at Virginia Tech, and it's like, that's stuff that people remember. That's stuff that students remember. And it stays with them forever. This actually got a little bit less press because it wasn't a Hollywood superstar involved. I don't know if you know who this person is on screen, but Skype, of course, is a great tool that I actually can't wait for them to take to several levels past where they're at now. Because it's good, but it's got to get better. And Skype in the classroom, let me tell you what we did with this. Go ahead and click it, Katie. We heard a lot of action. If you don't know who Aung San Suu Kyi is, she is a pro-democracy leader in Burma who has spent about 14 of the last 20 years of her life under house arrest for pro-democracy activities. She has won the Nobel Peace Prize. She is the shining light of democracy on planet Earth. Okay, someone who's given up everything in their life on this mission. And things are changing fast in Burma right now. She's been released, and all of a sudden, there's leadership changes, and they're getting ready to have a vote. And we got excited about this because I was teaching about it in class. And a student from Burma came up to me and said, I learned so much. I actually am from Burma. My parents are from Burma. But I didn't know all this until I took your class, which is often the case. And she's like, I'm so excited. Can we get her here? And I laugh. I'm like, yeah, sure. Go get a Nobel Peace Prize. We're going to come to class. Not a problem. Ask Barack Obama to come at the same time. Like, we can all party, all right? Networking. She's from Burma. Her parents from Burma. Her grandparents from Burma. They started a network, and I got all this. We made another video, sent it out viral. We started to get people in the D.C. area, diplomatic people, who started to say, hey, we heard of you guys. Okay, we know people who know people who know people. And lo and behold, that happened too. This is all in the single semester in fall. So that happened too with the good help of some people in this room, actually, who helped tweet it out and get people excited about it. And Clickety and Katie, I got to tell you, this was a life-changing event for student life-changing, because this woman truly is a beacon. That you hear about people like this, and you can read stuff they've written, but you talk to someone who spent most of their adult life in prison for a cause, who's so upbeat and saying, yes, you can change. You can change the world, people in that classroom on the opposite side of the planet. Look how great technology is and the human spirit is. And people walked out of there, I won't say weeping, but life change, community building. People have formed bonds and have memories they are not likely to ever forget. Okay, and we need to rush through these, and we get group synergy. We actually had other stars come in terms of two different Ugandan groups, which were not related to each other, but Red Bull, the media house, has an international documentary that they asked if they could come show in our class. Again, you get attention when you start having big numbers of people with eyes that want to see things. We actually had an international charitable organization called Invisible Children, which helps children who were used as child soldiers in Uganda. They said, hey, can we come talk to your class? And I said, sure, as long as the founder comes. And they're like, sure. Yeah, we'll send the founder. And he had a very inspirational message. Along with the kind of community building stuff that we talked about with Emilio Estevez, Aung San Suu Kyi offered an open invitation. She said, if any of your students ever make it to Burma, honestly and literally, you have a place to stay. Like, what? And her press person after the Skype event said, she does not joke. Yeah, that was a real offer. And we actually have a family who took their kids, one of which was in the class, who are over in Burma right now, who are trying to get in contact with her. Okay? I know we're out of time, so we're going to...
You have 5 minutes.
Yeah, just run through the litany of it. The group synergy actually, big events, of course, make a big impact. But it's really more about the students. I don't expect everyone in the room to get Nobel Peace Prize winners in their class. But the shadow cabinet has taken on a life of its own. People interacting with people. Some of our Plaid shadow leaders are doing such a good job. They have tens of thousands of followers, and they're fake. They're not even the real leader. When Russian President Dmitry Medvedev visited Silicon Valley about a year ago, he actually visited Google. And he visited Twitter, I don't know if anybody remembers this, and he signed up for an account on Twitter. Unfortunately for him, he used a coded name. He was like, Russ1395 was his Twitter handle. Well, that day, our Plaid, Dmitry Medvedev, picked up 6,000 followers because the news story broke and then everybody came and found us. And they're learning from us. I mean, people are having interactions with people like the president of Argentina all the time. People say, dear president, can you come fix a pothole in front of my house? We're like, well, we're not the real presidents, all right? But thanks. So we have interaction within the Plaid Adventure Cabinet. The hashtag has become, again, a student-to-student interactive tool that I actually don't do anything with. Turntable and all these other things have helped form communities of folks within the classroom, again, who've become not just friends, but study partners and help each other out. Go ahead. Click it through. Students owning their own class. We already talked about the Facebook cheaters, but the way the movie, Aung San Suu Kyi, Invisible Children, all of these were inspired by students in the class. These are all, I did not come up with this. The students came up and said, this class is really cool. Can we do this? And I got to the point, I said, I guess we can do anything because it keeps happening. And they took it upon themselves to organize, bring these groups in and do stuff. Does that make sense? So, and the final one is students stay connected long after class ends through Facebook and Twitter. We do have a growing core of people that are lifelong learners. I think that's what it's all about, right? You go ahead, Katie, just kind of click through it. Future endeavors include expanding, you can click on it again, Katie, expanding the student-derived content exercises more. Again, you have to shape it. You have to judge it. But, click it again, Katie, I just think that everyone in the world is an expert in something. I think teenagers in Iraq have a good sense of what the hell's going on in Iraq. I know they're young and inexperienced, but they probably got a better handle than, I guess, the Pentagon does at some points. So I want to tap into that, and I encourage everybody to tap into that true knowledge, sharing real stuff with each other. Go ahead, Katie. Click it again. The creating more social networks of specialists in our class, in our case, regional and local experts at the global scale. And this is where Skype Classroom comes into effect. I think they're doing a good job, and if you haven't visited this site, you should. But they have tags for people you can connect with. But I think we need to do a hell of a lot more, hell of a lot more, and not just teacher to teacher. I want to talk to an urban affairs specialist in Moscow. I want to talk to a currency evaluator in Beijing. I want real people coming into my classroom to talk about whatever it is that you guys teach. And I think that those networks are so simple to build, given today's technology. Building online community classrooms to share common time real events like guest speakers, international film. I heartily encourage you guys to contact me anytime you want, because my next phase is I want to figure out how to have an international cinema show online where we talk before the film and say, hey, here's what's going on. And as a community, let's then watch the film, and afterwards, as a community, come back and do a Q&A and learn from each other and discuss stuff. Film like music. Can you use them to teach stuff? I don't know. I do. But they're exceptionally great community-building tools, okay? As is the worst part of this Skype thing with Aung San Suu Kyi, quite frankly, was that we didn't share it with as many more people. We were so busy doing it that we didn't think to, let's get 100 other classrooms of people in on this, because this is really exciting. And given today's technology, everybody, we could have people asking questions from British Columbia, from South Africa. And we want to do that in the future, too. In closing, technologies in the classroom are not just gimmicks. Harness the tools. Students don't have to be passive. Those days are quickly numbered where students are passive. To a certain extent, you've got to get them reading and writing and arithmetic. But you get to a point of critical thinking that's like, no, you don't need to start regurgitating stuff. You need to start coming up with stuff. So we need to harness their knowledge. You don't have to do it alone. Harness community building efforts. All the crazy stuff that we did was because of communities of people in the classroom and other instructors. And finally, large classes can make large demands. Harness the potential. And very few, and I will brag a little bit here, very few people are looking at large classes and thinking, I can ask for lots of stuff. I'm teaching 3,000 people. Damn it, you're going to give me the resources to do this. And more even important than, say, resources, in closing thoughts, I think that the whole world is filled with experts who would die at the chance to speak to 3,000 motivated, young, voting age, spending demographic college students. And I'm not talking about, I put the word stars up here. Wouldn't a top scientist want to talk to 10,000 people about his latest breakthrough? Wouldn't an artist want to have an online rendition of music or art to 20,000 people in classrooms across the country? Why aren't we doing this already? I'm just goofing. I'm a goofball. I'm just goofing around with this stuff. You serious people now need to go get serious and do it right. You can kind of click the rest because I know we're out of time. Classrooms of the future, especially at college, are going to have to provide meaningful experiences like this. Otherwise, it's a complete waste of people's money. Because if you just want people to learn algebra, that's fine. Go to Khan Academy. Go on YouTube. Go read a book. That's not going to be enough for people to pay $20,000 a year to go to college.
Right?
If you're going to have to provide something meaningful. I say we. The community is. That's beyond simple content distribution. Anyone or any system can provide content consumable by millions. I call that TV. Okay? You're going to have the two-way street. You have to have the dialectic. It has to have the go, the back and forth, and the communication, because that's how people learn. Again, I'm not a historian, but I'm pretty sure 50,000 years ago, you taught your kid how to throw a spear by talking to him and seeing what he did right and wrong and teaching him, and he asked you questions, and that's how we do it. Technology is not going to replace that. It can only help us do it better to more people. Sorry, I'm sounding all prophetic now. But I end on that. Teaching is the art of the educational conversation. It's a conversation. Otherwise, it's just a TV show. Khan Academy's great. Udacity's awesome. But it's one way. We don't think we've reached the limits of what we can do two-way. We will. We'll find them. And that's when I'll take a step back. That's all I got, though. Sorry for ranting on so long and not allowing for questions. But I don't know when the next group comes in. But if there's 30 seconds left, I'll answer any questions that anybody wants. Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's your time. Thank you so much. Thank you.